From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in movie theaters, where the smell of popcorn, the blaring of previews, and the gradual darkening of the lights are welcoming audiences back this summer. There's nothing like seeing a movie on the big screen and asking yourself, just how much soda can I drink in 90 minutes? After a year of watching films from your couch, it's soda, by the way, it's not pop, it's soda. After a year of watching films from your couch, film studios have many enticements to get audiences back into the seats. Whether it's Marvel's first Asian superhero, LeBron James navigating the so-called serververse in a new Space Jam, or the music of Lin-Manuel Miranda. There's a lot on the film docket, and we're going to be talking about as much as we can this hour. Our guests are regulars at the theater. They've already previewed some of the summer films. They're very excited about what they want to see. We're talking about the must-sees, the surprises, the under-the-radar stuff, and the stuff that should be less under the radar, more like right on the middle of it. We'll also talk about how theaters are coming out of the pandemic and dealing with some of the changes in schedules as we get used to being back together again. I'd like to welcome our guests. And by the way, we've got two guests in studio. Scott Pukas is in studio with me. Scott, I'm so excited. It's so nice to have human beings in the studio.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
It's nice to see your face. I've never said that to you. Scott is a public relations coordinator for the Little Theater. And they've done such a great job throughout the pandemic, and so nice that we're able to be back in theaters. And also with us in studio, Adam Lubito is a film writer and programmer. It's great to see you in person, too.
Yeah, it's exciting to be here. It's weird, but in a good way.
Yeah, it's a good weird. It's a very good weird. I like that. Now, we do have two guests on the phone who someday I'll see Jackie McGriff in person again. She's co-founder of the Our Voices Project, the owner of Jackie Photography, and a big-time movie fan. Jackie, welcome back. I'll see you at some point again, won't I?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad to be here virtually.
And Jared Case as well. Jared is curator of film exhibitions at the George Eastman Museum. Hi, Jared.
Hey, Evan. How are you doing?
I'm great. I saw a movie in the theater recently. I went to the Little Theater, and I had a great experience. And Scott, remind us when the Little is open for business again right now.
Yeah, so right now the Little is open Friday, Saturday, and Sundays for movies. We are open Wednesdays for live music in the cafe as well. But yeah, right now we're just doing the weekend for films. And thelittle.org has all our showtimes and movies that are upcoming. So a lot of the movies we'll talk about today are listed on our website.
And what's the schedule outlook going forward for you?
So opening this weekend, we have a movie called Gunda, which is kind of like the antithesis of a summer movie, where it's not a big blockbuster. It is a movie that is black and white, experimental documentary that is mostly just farm animals. Gunda is the name of a pig in the film. So it follows this pig, some other farm animals like a cow, a one-legged chicken. And then after that, June 11th, we have two movies, In the Heights and The Truffle Hunters, that I think will be both big hits for us too.
All right, so let's do this. Let's listen to a clip of In the Heights. Now, this is Lin-Manuel Miranda, and we're going back to before he wrote and put Hamilton on the stage. He did In the Heights. Now it's coming to the screen, and we've got a clip with some music. See if you can pick up sort of the stylistic similarity of Lin-Manuel Miranda and Hamilton here.
Even farther than Harlem to Northern Manhattan and maintain. Get off at 181st and take the escalator. I hope you're writing this down. I'm gonna test you later. I'm getting tested. Times are tough on this bodega. 2 months ago, somebody bought Ortegas. Our neighbors started packing up and picking up. And ever since the rest went up, it's gotten mad expensive. But we live with just enough.
In the Heights, I flip the lights and start my day.
Kevin Rosario, he runs the cab company. He struggles in the barrio. See, his daughter Nina's off at college. Tuition is mad steep, so he can't sleep. Everything he get is mad cheap.
All right, that similarity is striking. He's got a great style to it. And Adam Lubito, you've seen it on stage, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the show.
You love the show. And I asked Adam before the hour began, did you like it as much as Hamilton? I sort of said that cheekily, because I figured, well, no, nobody likes as much as Hamilton. And you said, maybe.
They're pretty close for me. You said there are musical similarities, but they're very different shows. So I like them for different reasons. But I'm excited to see the screen adaptation of this. I've been looking forward to it.
Generally speaking, Adam, how do you feel like screen adaptations do when you take something that has thrived on stage, that is so much known for its in-person experience, the big music, the set pieces, and then you put it on a screen? How does it usually go?
I think the trick is the best ones are where a director can find ways to make it cinematic, because the ones that aren't as successful, they just kind of do what they can to replicate that stage experience, and that just doesn't work on screen. It flattens everything. And so that's why I'm excited about this, because I feel like John Chu, the director, has a knack for musicals. Even though this is his first full-on musical, but he directed a couple of the Step Up movies, which were full of dance.
Ooh,
and he did Crazy Rich Asians, which wasn't a musical, but so often felt like one. I'm pretty sure even in my reviewing of that, I was like, I want to see him do a musical after seeing this movie. And so I've been pumped about this, and I was sad when it got delayed from last year. So I've been looking forward to this for a while, and yeah, I'm super excited.
Scott, when is it in theaters?
So In the Heights opens June 11th at the Little.
All right, it's coming. And do you sort of like share the enthusiasm for this one, Scott?
Oh yeah, I'm very excited. I haven't seen it before. I loved Hamilton, like most humans. So I'm really excited to learn new music.
It's the law. You have to like Hamilton. We all do. Adam, by the way, what's the premise of In the Heights?
It's not, I'll start by saying it's not really a plot-driven musical, but it's about the citizens of the Washington Heights neighborhood in New York City. It centers around, the main character runs a bodega in the neighborhood and dreams of eventually going back to the Dominican Republic. But it just follows a handful of characters in the neighborhood and sort of what they're going through.
Jackie McGriff, have you seen it on stage?
I have not, no. But I think it's safe to say anything that has Lin-Manuel Miranda attached to it, I'm definitely seeing. And I loved Hamilton. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this one in theaters.
Jared Case, have you seen it?
I have not seen it on stage, but I'm excited that the Little is preparing for their first big blockbuster since we've been closed.
Scott, you know, I mean, like, if you do too many big blockbusters, it's like, you know, the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, who was brilliant, still did the Mission Impossible movies to pay the bills. I hope the indie films still pay your bills over there, but the blockbusters are fun, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we still have movies, like I said, like Gunda, which is very, very much for the art house crowd.
Yes.
And we do the musicals. Like, we had Cats even. So, of course, we're going to get In the Heights.
See, nobody should have cats, though. I love I love actual cats, just not the movie version of cats. Not
fair.
Did anybody like cats? Jackie McGriff, I heard you laughing. Did you like cats?
I didn't see it.
Good
but
for you.
I listened to a podcast where they make fun of it, and it was amazing. So.
Jared, did you see Cats?
No, that good never really interested me.
That's good. That's good. That's good for your health. Did you see it, Scott?
I didn't, but I believe Adam did.
Come on. I did.
And?
I will say I had a great time watching it.
It's an experience.
Yeah. I saw it at the Little. I had a couple glasses of wine in the cafe beforehand. And so
you don't get
I had
to be,
a great time.
You don't get to be like, no, it was a great date night and we had fun.
I'm not gonna. No, it was not a good movie, but I had a good time watching it.
Okay, all the cats lovers are going to be emailing me and telling. And I love actual cats, like real life cats. I'm a cat person, just not the movie. So let's talk about another movie that I'd never heard of until Scott sent me a trailer. And holy cow, apparently there's like this huge interest in this movie called The Green Knight. I think
oh
we should.
God.
I think we should. Was that you, Jackie?
Yes, that was me. Yeah.
So I think we should set, first of all, Scott, can you describe some of the plot here? And before we get to a clip, there's even a talking fox in this. Like, what is the story here?
I'm very excited for the talking fox, by the way. But it's based on an Arthurian legend. So it follows King Arthur's nephew, and he's on a quest to confront the Green Knight, who's this giant, you can see from the trailer, is a giant, like, Game of Thrones-looking dude that he has to battle. And then it has the talking fox. So it was a movie that was going to be released last summer and had a lot of buzz then. So it got delayed an entire year, as most of the movies on this list. So there's a lot of buzz about this one.
But talking fox or not, like, everything I see in the trailer is intense with this.
Oh yeah,
it's not meant to be like kind of a goofy. It's right. It doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, and it has Dev Patel as stars in it too, which is always a big draw point. Who doesn't love Dev Patel?
Okay, you look like you want to add to that, Adam?
No, I was just going to say the director, David Lowery, is very much, yeah, he's taking this very seriously. All of his movies have been kind of in that vein. He did A Ghost Story, which was amazing. And he also did the Pete's Dragon remake for Disney, which mm-hmm. kind of made that much more serious and made it a completely different movie. But yeah, so that's kind of his thing.
All right, I'm going to let Jackie fan out on this in just a second. But before we do that, let's listen just a short clip. What in the world is happening in this clip? He's like out with a fox. The fox is talking to him. And the fox is basically telling him, sorry, this is where your life's about to end, my friend. Like, you're in bad shape.
Yeah, the fox seems, I haven't seen it, but the fox seems like almost like a spiritual guide. So I had to send this clip to you guys because I'm like, it's the fox talking.
I have
Who
no
doesn't
idea.
Love that?
Let's listen to this clip. I have no idea if people are even going to be able to understand any of it, but this is from The Green Knight.
Another year nearly gone already. You must seek him out.
Was it not just a game?
Perhaps. But it is not complete.
You'll find no mercy. No happy end.
Why do you stop me?
Your doom is at hand.
Your doom is at hand, the fox said. There's a fox in my neighborhood who just eats bread and is kind of pleasant, doesn't talk to me like that, but that's not the coolest fox I've ever seen. Jackie, why are you so pumped for this?
First of all, this cast is amazing. So, of course, you have Dev Patel, Aaron Kellyman, who was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. For those of you who haven't watched that show, seriously, you have to watch it. She was incredible in that, so I'm looking forward to her being in this movie. Alicia Vikander, I'm pretty sure I'm just butchering her name, but like she's just been incredible. Her performance in Ex Machina was just awesome. And then there's another actor in here who his performance in The Killing of a Sacred Deer, it's the reason why I don't trust this actor because the way that he played his role, and I won't say much about his role in that film because it will otherwise give it away, but Barry Keoghan, looking forward to him being in this as well. Also, it was just the trailer. Like, looking at the trailer, when I saw it, like, a while back, just everything about this really intrigued me. And it looks different. It feels different. The only other thing that I've seen by this director was Ape and Body Saints, and I actually really did enjoy that film. So I'm looking forward to this as well. And I just can't wait. It looks like a fun time, and it looks like, again, it just looks different. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
So Dev Patel is the lead, and I had I had him confused. He's the guy from Slumdog Millionaire, and it was 13 years ago that movie came out. It's been 13 years since Slumdog Millionaire. I would have believed 5. Like, what has happened to time? Oh, my goodness. He was like 16 in that movie. So anyway, he's apparently a powerhouse star. I'm not enough of a film buff to know this stuff. But so you got Dev Patel. Jackie loves the cast. Adam, why are you excited about this?
I will echo those reasons, but also I'll go back to the director. I've been a fan of pretty much everything he's made so far. So I'm excited to see him take on an epic fantasy.
This is coming at a time, Scott, when, you know, we're post Game of Thrones now, and there's maybe an appetite for something in that vein. And there, as you told me before the program began, that there are at least some echoes or at least some interesting kind of little nods. What do you see here?
Yeah, I thought it kind of looked similar in terms of, again, it's Arthurian legend, so it's similar battles, sword fighting. Even A24 is the distributor, and they even released a role-playing game, that The Green Knight, that you could play in tandem with this, which I feel kind of it reaches the similar interest of people who are into Game of Thrones or into the books and the show.
All right. Jared, is this one on your list for the summer?
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking through what's coming out in the summer, and that was one of the two, really, that caught my eye as something that I'm going to have to see in the theater.
All right. Well, and it's coming. Is it coming your way, Scott? Is it coming at the Little?
Yeah, it opens July 30th at the Little.
July 30th for The Green Knight and Dev Patel from Slumdog Millionaire because we are all old. Okay. I've got one more film that I can play a clip from, and this looks like a really cool film about Rita Moreno, who just an amazing woman. And the name of the film is Rita Moreno, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go for It. And you've got a lot of really sort of historic voices in this particular trailer. This is just about a minute from it. So some of you may recognize, you can hear Rita herself, but it gives you a sense of the story they're telling about her. Let's listen.
Hello, cutie. She comes with history. Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
I was really drawn to her. She made me feel like a woman could do anything because she did. She was a Latina, like me.
She just brings such authority and such honesty to whatever she's playing.
Some people might view Rita Moreno as the embodiment of the American dream.
At the age of 16 years old, she was the sole breadwinner for her family.
Little Puerto Rican girl whom nobody thought much of.
At MGM with a contract.
This girl is present to me from Burma Prince.
I really was very often treated like a sex object.
The studio would ask contract players to go out on pretend dates.
Before I know it, he's forcing himself on me.
When you enter a contract to a studio, they own you.
West Side Story seems to be the big one. What are you going to do for an encore now?
That's hard to follow.
Yeah.
I think sometimes there are wounds that simply don't heal well.
She made herself into somebody she wasn't for a very long time.
It really hurt her soul to have to play those characters in that way.
So it's the story of Rita Moreno and her life, her career, what she had to sacrifice, the way the industry treated women, women of color. By the way, Scott Pukka, she's listed as on the cast for In the Heights.
I did not know that.
See, that
breaking
upcoming
that to me,
films.
That's interesting.
She's going
to
be 90 this year, and she's listed on the cast of In the Heights, which is coming to the Little. When is the Rita Moreno story, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go for It, coming to the Little?
This opens June 18th, and this is one that people have been asking me about. Like, my role, I get to communicate a lot with our members and people who go to the Little, and this is one people have been asking, are you getting the Rita Moreno talk? So, yes, we are.
And, you know, Adam, she's been, you know, her career spans 70 years or so. What's her place in the industry, do you?
I mean, she's a legend. I mean, even in that clip, she's one of the few EGOT winners. You know, she's kind of done it all. And I'm always a fan of the documentaries that kind of shine a spotlight on those legends and make sure, you know, they get their due.
Absolutely.
Because she absolutely deserves it.
Jackie, how do you think of her?
I feel like I don't know a ton about her. Like, I'm familiar with her. For some of her work and everything, but like hearing that clip, there's a lot that I don't know, and especially when like we're trying to be more, it just talks of like inclusivity and everything like that. Like, I don't hear a whole lot about people from like that background, from the Latino community and everything, and like their contributions to our history and everything like that. So like, it'll be amazing to hear her story.
What do you think, Jared?
Rita Moreno is just a legend, and I feel like she's always been part of my life, watching movies or watching TV, whether it's West Side Story or she's appearing as guests on other TV shows. And you go back and look at her film history, she just is a firework. She explodes on screen, especially when you see it on a big screen. So I think this is going to be really great. It's one that was available at Sundance, and I knew that was going to come out and I was going to be able to see it. So I was trying to choose other things that I would not have a chance to see, but that's going to be an exciting one.
I think of certainly what this film seems to be trying to say, or at least be willing to do, which is to take an honest look at the cost for someone like Rita Moreno and what the industry demanded of her and the way, the way women in particular are treated. And it's, at least based on the trailer, seems to be willing to go to some places that are really raw and honest. Whereas I really liked the Linda Ronstadt documentary that I saw a couple of years ago. I think it was pre-pandemic. But it felt like a little bit of a, hey, here's an amazing voice and a woman in music, and we give you a little taste of her feminism and the power of this amazing woman, not just on stage, but to who she was. But we got a little taste of that, and then it sort of went away and just went back to the music, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, I liked that documentary on Linda Ronstadt, and I recommend it. but I felt like that was sort of missing. Whereas in this case, you know, I'm curious to know what our guests think about an industry, about how seriously this industry is willing to take a look and have a reckoning. And obviously, last hour, we had a really tough conversation about a story of sexual and emotional abuse. A lot of these stories, the dam broke when the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out. And I'm wondering if the industry itself is serious about a reckoning, or if you think they're willing to do it in ways that are sort of virtue signaling, but from what we can tell, not a whole lot's changed. It's hard to tell for me, Scott. What do you think so far?
Yeah, I certainly hope they're serious about it. But yeah, it's difficult to tell. And I think maybe there's little steps that are being made, and you'd like to see more progress and more people realizing these mistakes and correcting them and working toward being better at that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I think the fact that the conversation is still going on and has continued gives me hope, but I feel like Hollywood has always been slow to actually learn the lessons that it needs to, but I'm cautiously hopeful. The fact that we're still talking about it and, you know, things incrementally seem to be changing, even if, you know, those increments have taken decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jackie?
I think it's more, it feels more to me like virtual signaling. Like every few years, they'll be like, okay, this is what we're doing as far as, you know, just talking about these topics and really hitting hard. Like, I appreciate all of the speeches, you know, that were done during the like awards and everything. Mm-hmm. And I've seen bits and pieces of progress, but to me, I'm like, well, okay, if we're having to still have these conversations and people are still talking about like these struggles, obviously we have a long way to go. So don't just talk about it, follow through with it. So yeah, I mean, I'm always hopeful, but then again, I'm not necessarily holding my breath.
Jared, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the motion picture industry is still a business. And when something threatens the bottom line, it takes a long time to change. And any movement we can make, whether it's talking about it or doing something in person or supporting the projects that get this right, I think is important. And as long as we keep moving forward, I mean, the static is not good. That's good as well as moving back. You just got to keep moving forward.
Talking about films coming our way this summer, I'm sure listeners are wondering, Evan, how come you haven't talked about the new Ghostbusters? Because it's not coming out till November. The new release date for the newest iteration of Ghostbusters is November 11th. 2021. It was originally slated to be July of last year. The pandemic hit. So you wonder, why not a summer film? I don't know. Maybe they're retooling it. They always seem to be doing that with these Ghostbusters films. This one is directed by Jason Reitman, who I think is Ivan Reitman's son. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yes, guys?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Paul Rudd has been involved, and Ghostbusters Afterlife is the name of the film. Anyway, I'm sure we'll do a whole show on that. And let me also say, just because we're on the subject of Ghostbusters, great place to see that would be the little theater. I'm just saying. But I will also say that, you know, I didn't love the all-women cast version. I just didn't laugh that much. I love those women individually. I mean, I love Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, Kristen Wiig, Megan McCarthy. Who else?
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy. Melissa
McCarthy. It's a great cast. But when I went back and looked, I said, I think Paul Feig wrote this. Like, it's written by a man. You know, you can have an all cast of women, but let's get one of these things written by women. That's my next thing on Ghostbusters. Let's do it again. Let's have women write it. We are talking movies, summer movies, with Scott Pukas from the Little Theater. Jackie McGriff is the co-founder of the Our Voices Project, the owner of Jackie Photography, and one of our favorite folks just to talk film. Adam Lubiteau is a film writer and programmer. Jared Case, curator of film exhibitions at the George Eastman Museum. And after we take this only break of the hour, we're going to come back and continue to go down their list of what stands out to them. What are they excited to see on the big screen this summer? So many people vaccinated, we're getting together again, and we are going out to the movies. More with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, WXXI reporter James Brown has done a deep dive on the future of Rochester's inner loop. President Biden's infrastructure plan could do away with what's left of it. What could that mean for transportation in Rochester? James and more talking about it. Then in our second hour, what do bees have to do with microplastics? We're joined by experts who explain how honeybees are living probes of how microplastics are everywhere in our world. Talk with you Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going out to the movies, talking about a summer movie preview. And I mentioned, Jared, that that in my own recent past, I found a way to see a great movie on the screen at the Little, which is a great place to do it. I know the Dryden gets a chance to put on films that I think are classics and have a chance for people to see it in a great setting like that. What's on your list? What's coming up for you?
Well, next week we're showing The Wizard of Oz as part of a Judy Garland weekend. We've got what is possibly her greatest performance in A Star is Born next Friday, June 11th, and then Wizard of Oz on June 12th. And we're planning on selling that out. We're at about 146 capacity right now with our masks on and 6 feet distance from each other. So we're very excited about having as full a house as we have since we've opened.
146 capacity with how many seats in there?
500.
You're following the rules and you're doing what you got to do. Do you feel like it won't be that long before there might be half capacity, more than that? What do you think?
Well, I'm not going to go to Las Vegas and put any money on my estimations of when things were happening, because I've been wrong so many times, and sometimes it seems like it's moving so slow, and sometimes it seems like it's moving really, really fast. I know that there are a lot of businesses now that have less restrictions on masks, but with the amount of time that we spend together in the theater, we're still feeling very safe having the masks on and having a distance until we get just a higher percentage, I think, and we'll make decisions on that as we go.
For you, Scott Pukas, what is the capacity restriction over at the Little? What's it look like right now?
So still, we're mostly open for our back theaters, which are our four theaters. So the capacity ranges from like 20 to 40 right now. Normally, it's about 100 to 170. We did have a screening Sunday, our first one in Theater 1, which is our main historic theater on East Avenue. And this was our first screening in that building since 2020, since before the pandemic. And we held about 90 people it was a live filmmaker Q&A. So we actually got to do a live something that we always do at the Little, which is the filmmaker discussion after the movie.
Did that feel like sort of normal times, like the before times?
A little. I moderated the discussion. I had my mask on the whole time. We're still having staff wear a mask, and people wear masks in the building too, unless they're eating or drinking. So it was close enough where it was like doing the discussion and seeing familiar faces. And I think our crowd and most of the movie crowd in Rochester is great. They're smart, they're passionate, but they also care about places like the Little and Trident. So everyone's been really respectful of the safety procedures that we have in place, which has made things a little easier for us.
You agree with that, Jared? You want to add to that?
I can absolutely echo that. I mean, we have been so happy with the support that we've had from the film audience, especially downtown, because they were ready to come back in April when the Little and the Dryden opened, and they came back in droves. We sold out a couple screenings at 100 seats, and we had screenings following that up, but just because we knew that people wanted to see them again. So Citizen Kane and Rear Window, those classics, they sold out, and we showed them again. And we're expecting to do the same thing with Wizard of Oz, but it's been great to see just the excitement of people getting back in the building and seeing things on a big screen. Because whenever I talk to people, I always say that cinema is three things. It is immediate. You have to make an appointment. You can't pause it. It is immersive. It's got that big screen, and it's got the sound surrounding you. And it is communal. You have to see films with other people in order to get that full experience. You get the little micro reactions, whether it's a little titter over on the side and say, oh, is this supposed to be funny? Or you hear people weeping, and it affects you on a guttural level, so that you're really getting into that affect of the film.
I think that's really, really well said. And in fact, having been in a movie theater just recently, it reminded me of what I'm missing. Reminded me of what I feel like our couch can't deliver. And I'm not being a homer for the Little. Of course, we've got a relationship with the Little. I'm not being a homer for the Dryden because we love the work they do. I'm just saying, from my perspective, I understand the convenience, and I understand that it's going to take some time to figure out how permanent a change has been made due to the pandemic and how much people are either itching to get back out or just wanting to sort of stay forever on their couches with streaming services. But I don't think a lot of these films are quite the same. And, you know, Jackie, how do you feel about seeing films in a setting like Jared just described versus sitting on your couch?
Yeah, I can't, as far as like watching it on a smaller screen, it just doesn't do films justice. Like there are, I mean, I will go see, as soon as the little opened up, I went to go see Nomadland. Even though I knew it was on Hulu, it was streaming on Hulu, I was like, no, like I have to, this is something that's nominated for an Oscar. I have to go see it on a big screen. And there's nothing quite like being in a theater with other people who are also very serious. I feel like people who go to the little theater and people who go to Dryden to watch films, they're not on their screens, like during the, or they're not on their cell phones watching the movie. They're totally immersed. They're there for the film. And then total strangers, people I've never met before will strike up a conversation with you after the film about how you felt about it and everything. It's just, there are settings for people who really love going to the movies. And even with going to other movies, like I went, okay, I have a little confession. For Tenet, I went to go see it because there were no theaters open in Rochester at the time, and I really wanted to see Tenet. So, yes, I was that person who did drive 2 hours to go watch it. But that, again, that's the Tenet. Of course, if it's a Christopher Nolan film, so you know that you're getting something that you absolutely have to experience on the big screen. The same with The Quiet Place Part 2, which I highly recommend, by the way, for anyone who's into that. It's a movie that you have to see on screen because otherwise seeing it on a small screen, if you're just watching on your TV, if you're watching your cell phone, it doesn't do the movie justice.
Well, I mean, Tenet, I'll tell you what you're getting. You're getting a headache. Nobody understood that movie. Come on. Does anybody get, come on, Jackie, it might've been a fun experience, but you cannot explain that movie.
Not now. I don't remember a whole lot. I'd have to watch it a couple more times. But I do remember there is a certain point when you're watching. I was watching with a friend, and we were the only ones in the theater, by the way. So we were watching it, and then at a certain point, and I feel like this always happens with Christopher Nolan films, there's a certain point you're confused, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait. Because there's things you start to piece together, and I just feel like I'm watching that. But, yeah, no, I could not explain that movie now. I would have to go back and watch it.
Listen, it is.
And I'm sure there'd be other things that I could explain as well or notice.
It is a hell of a business model when people have got to see a movie 3 or 4 times before they get it. That's the story of Tenet, man.
Genius marketing. That is genius marketing. Oh, wait, I got to go see it again to catch what I missed. Yeah, absolutely.
But Jackie is bringing up Tenet. She brings up Quiet Place, films like that are just different experiences. I mean, again, not to be trite, but every experience in a theater is different. Even sort of the art house, even the quieter films, but there have got to be some films. What comes to mind for you that, you know, I will probably see the new Space Jam that's coming out this summer because my son is a LeBron James fan and he will want to see if LeBron could act, which all the evidence suggests so far that he cannot. He can play basketball very well, does a lot of things very well. We're going to see if he can act. That'll be a fun one on a big screen. But what stands out to you on a big screen that you go, you can't watch this on your couch?
Well, first of all, LeBron was really good in Trainwreck, which a 2016 comedy.
You think he was good in that?
I thought he was good in that. Maybe,
okay.
I don't know.
He was okay.
I'm excited for Space Jam. But to answer your question, one movie I've always... Before the pandemic, we had a 1999 series at the Littles. This was 2019, so they're all 20th anniversary screenings. So they were all movies that most people had seen before. And The Matrix is one of my all-time favorite movies. And seeing that on the big screen, it's playing on cable all the time, so you can watch it like any time. But just seeing it on the big screen is just sets it apart. That was a summer movie back in 99, but so not a new one, but that's just one I always think of, this movie theater experience and that magical spot and just seeing it with a crowd. Like when the credits came on, it's a Rage Against the Machine song that's playing, and just the energy in that room at the Little when we played it. You can't beat that. You can't duplicate that. Mm. And at home, certainly not.
Adam, what stands out for you?
It's funny. I was actually, my example was also from the 1999 series that The Little did, because I was going to toss out The Blair Witch Project, which was the first movie I ever saw at The Little, but then they screened again during that series. And I've seen it a ton of times, but seeing it again in a pretty packed screening is just a completely different experience when you have, you know, other people reacting around you.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. Blair Witch for me. This, I don't know, the last week is like Evan overshares about his past. So let's just stay with the theme here. So when Blair Witch came out, I was on a date. And similar to how I felt in my teens and 20s when I would go to amusement parks and acted like I liked roller coasters when I was terrified of them just to impress a girl, you know, I could fake it enough. Blair Witch, I'm on a date. I could not fake it. That movie scared me in the theater more than any movie has ever scared me in a theater.
Yeah,
and I was not an impressive date. I think I was like hiding under a chair. That one really, and I didn't buy into, like, if people remember at the time, what was this, late 90s? That there was like this, oh, this might be real. This was just like lost footage. They did a wonderful job at the time of convincing at least some people that this might have been a real thing. I didn't buy that, and it still messed with me psychologically. That theater experience, like at home, I could have like walked into the kitchen, gotten a drink, stayed away from, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah. But not in a theater. It was totally different. I will also say the last movie I saw in a theater before the pandemic, Jojo Rabbit at the Little, was an amazing experience on a screen like that with a room full of people that was, frankly, to me, that movie was moving comedically, emotionally, historically, thematically. That's one of the best movies I have ever seen, and I saw it at the Little, and I'm so glad I saw that on the big screen. Jared, are you worried that habits are going to be hard to break, or do you think people are coming back?
You know, I was worried about it before we reopened, but I think that Rochester is such a great arts community, and it goes back to the late 19th and early 20th century. There's so much history. I mean, the Little is one of the oldest theaters still operating, and we've been here for 70 years now. So it's a great community that's been brought along their entire lives to come see movies and make that part of their lives. So I would have said that I was worried ahead of time, but knowing what we know about what we can bring to the screen and how that experience affects the viewer, I'm actually not that worried. I've seen people coming back, and I know they're eager for more.
Okay. I want to ask all of you about this. I mean, if we don't change our habits here, we can talk all we want about big screen experiences. Things are going to change dramatically. I do think, Scott, that enough people are coming back that we're going to be sort of in a normalish world here soon enough, but I don't know for sure. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I know the support is there. You know, like we mentioned, this town is amazing. It has an amazing film community. Our membership actually grew in April last year when we were closed for a month from the pandemic, and of course it went longer. So we know that support is there, which is amazing. But this is a time where movie theaters really need that support, and same with independent films. That's why I mentioned earlier we showed Drunk Bus, which is continuing this weekend at the Little, filmed mm-hmm. in Rochester, and the directors and producer came to the Little for a Q&A. And it's just really important to support art like that, filmmakers who you know, these directors, they had to do all their promotion themselves. You know, I mean, the distributor did help, but just supporting that smaller independent art, more bold filmmaking, and then theaters like the Little, like we you know, we still really need donations, and if people are interested in membership, you know, certainly that helps us. And same with Dryden. I know it's just that support is needed more than ever now, because it's a difficult time. We always have faced challenges working in movie theaters and independent venues, and now that challenge is increased.
Adam Lubito, what about, you know, sort of the small screen versus big screen? Where do you think we are in terms of habits?
I think people were, you know, if people appreciated the convenience of, you know, being able to watch things at home, mm-hmm. streaming services. But I get the impression that it also gave people an opportunity to realize that there is a difference. Like, it's not the same watching it, you know, by yourself on a couch. Especially, you know, when studios kind of, they'll do whatever, you know, will continue to make them money. So like Warner Brothers switched to, you know, putting all their big blockbusters out on HBO Max, their own streaming service. And I feel like, you know, now that people are watching those at home to what would typically be big event movies, mm-hmm. It's not the same. And I feel like even studios are kind of realizing that when they're in theaters, there was a chance to like kind of build up a buzz and get people talking about it. And it became like a you know, a cultural thing. I think if even something like Black Panther, if that just went to streaming, I don't think it would have had nearly as much of an impact as, you know, it eventually did.
Oh, so true. That is a great call on Black Panther. That, you talk about an amazing studio theater experience for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jackie, just a couple of comments on this before I get your take on this. Matt on Twitter says, I will watch The Irishman as Martin Scorsese intended, on an iPhone while hiding from my kids in the bathroom, broken up into 17 parts over 2.5 weeks. I don't think that's how Martin Scorsese intended it, but that's what amazing what modern technology will do when you're hiding in your bathroom. I thought most of us were playing words with friends in there. But so there's that idea. And, you know, Jackie, the other night I watched a new movie called Plan B that just came out. And, I streamed it. I really liked it. But should I feel guilty when I do stuff like that, Jackie?
Not at all. I think for me, a little theater coming out with their virtual programming and everything like that. So, being able to see it at home while they were, you know, while they weren't open, that was nice. I do like, I mean, I will go to the movies to watch documentaries, but as long as documentaries can be streamed, I always have those on. I do love watching those kinds of films. I think for me, it really depends on the movie, but anytime that I can support a theater, I'm always there. As far as people coming back and everything, I'm definitely hopeful. I can't tell you how many times over the past year and a half that I've seen over social media all those reaction videos. So for those of you who are not familiar, there were a lot of people posting that there's a famous scene in Avengers Endgame where you can hear someone recorded it in a movie theater, of course, pre-pandemic, of the crowd, the audience is cheering and just screaming and just reacting in the most amazing way. I certainly appreciate that. And I know, so if there are all these reaction videos that just keep on popping up and everything, I'm definitely hopeful that there are others out there who really want to get back to the theater. And so, yeah. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. In a moment, I'll ask our guests for what else is on their list as we get ready for summer movies. Let me grab a phone call. And this is, I think we've got Tara on line one. I'm having a hard time with our board here. Kara.
Tara,
I had it. I had it right the first time. That's my fault. Yeah. Hi, Tara. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Tara Miranda Nelson. I am the curator of Moving Image at Visual Studies Workshop. It's great to listen to this conversation. Hi, Jared. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Tara. Hey.
So glad everybody's back in the studio and back in the theaters, and it's just a great time to be coming out of hiding, I guess. And I would just like to plug Visual Studies Workshop's upcoming micro cinema series. We actually run for the past 6 years consistently, and for the past 52 years intermittently, experimental film and independent film series that features film artists, so artists who work in film, and often they are in person. And our upcoming screening is with film artist Ephraim Asili, who is an African-American filmmaker. He made a film called The Inheritance in 2020, which is an astounding view of it's a scripted narrative, but it's a film about a West Philadelphia artist, Black artist collective that forms. And it's related to the bombing of the MOVE Liberation Group in West Philadelphia. And Ephraim Asili is going to be here in person presenting that. And we're doing it with a double feature with Godard's La Chinoise, which is a 1967 film that was inspirational to Asili. So having Ephraim here, and he also made a book related to his film practice as an artist. He's also a DJ, so he's got an LP with the book. We're going to be playing the LP and releasing the book, so it'll be limited books available, but the double feature takes place June 11th through the 13th. So here at the new micro cinema space, we seat about 50 people in a small gallery that's an intimate setting, but we're only seating 25 for this event, so it's a limited number of people. So if you're interested, Acili will be here on June 12th, and the double feature happens June 11th, 12th, and 13th. So check out our VSW.org for tickets.
VSW.org, Tara.
Correct. Visual Studies Workshop. We're at 31 Prince Street. We've been here since 1969. And we have a consistent presence of artists on small screen. It's a non-traditional cinema space, but we show film on film whenever possible. We show film with the artist in the room with us to have discussions whenever possible. And so if you're interested in a more intimate kind of focused discussion with an artist about filmmaking, or interested in alternative and experimental film, look at vsw.org in the film series.
Thanks, Tara. Good luck to you guys this summer.
Thanks, Evan.
That's Tara Nelson from the Visual Studies Workshop, vsw.org. And we got about 5-6 minutes left to cover a little bit of ground and what our guests are excited about. So, Adam Lubiteau, what else is on your list for coming this summer that you want to see on the screen?
I'm going to toss out two really quick, very different films. One is one that I feel like Jared will probably have something to add to, called All Light Everywhere.
Which is
a documentary by filmmaker Theo Anthony, who did a film in 2016 called Rat Film, which was about Baltimore's rodent problem, but using that to explore ideas of poverty and segregation in the history of redlining. And this one is about kind of photo technology and the differences between our human biases and the unreliability of technology, and sort of focusing on surveillance technologies and police body cameras. So he makes really interesting films, and I believe it's going to be screening at the Dryden, and I can't wait because I think he's a great, fascinating filmmaker.
That was one. You have another you want to
mention? Yes, I'm also going to toss out Candyman, which I've been dying to see, which got delayed from last year. A remake, sort of sequel to the 1992
horror movie?
Yes.
Oh, man.
But I really enjoy the original, but I always felt for a movie that's kind of about racism, I had a white filmmaker. This one is directed by Nia DaCosta, a black female filmmaker. So I'm really excited to see what she does with that story and that material.
All right, I'll give you the story is more interesting. I'd never understood the horror genre. Maybe we need a horror films intervention for Evan on Connections soon. Convince me that horror is worth watching. You want to be part of that intervention?
Absolutely.
I know you would be like first top of the list there. And by the way, Jared, you want to pick it up from there, because I know All Light Everywhere is coming to the Dryden, right?
It is, yeah. We're excited about that. In July is when we're premiering that. We're giving it two screenings on July 9th and July 24th. And I'm sure Adam and I could fill an entire hour just talking about it before people saw it or after, and just the fascinating way that he takes this concept of what we see and what we think is real, and going beyond that to surveillance and observation. And it's a really great, fascinating film, one of my favorites out of Sundance. Also in July, another Sundance film that I saw called First Date, which we're premiering on July 2nd and July 10th. It's one of our Rochester premieres. It's a really fun film. It was so great to see something a little bit different. And it's about this young man who finally gets up the nerve to ask out the cute girl next door, and he promises to pick her up in his car, only his parents are taking the car for the weekend. So he ends up buying really cheap this beat-up old 65 Chrysler, only to find out that there are criminals and cops wanting this car as well. So it turns into this really fun overnight adventure. It's a little bit Coen's, a little bit Tarantino, and a lot of funny. And we've got two new ones coming up this weekend, which are foreign films. Christian Petzold's newest one, Undine, is coming. And that's basically The Little Mermaid, just updated to modern-day Germany. Hmm. And it reteams Paula Beer and Franz Rogowski, who were in his last film, Transit, which we showed a couple of years ago. And then Zha Zhangke is a classic Chinese director. He's doing a documentary called Swimming Out Till the Sea Turns Blue. And that looks at his province in China, Shaanxi province. And it looks at the history of China through the eyes of three writers that have come out of that province. So we've got old films, we've got new films, and hopefully everybody's going to come see everything.
Hey, where do people see the schedule? Real quick, Jared, online where?
Yeah. Eastman.org/Dryden, D-R-Y-D-E-N.
Okay, Jackie McGriff, 30 seconds. What's on the list for you?
Let's see, Black Widow, that has been pushed and kept being pushed and everything. I just want to see the dang movie. I'm looking forward to that one. And then Respect, which is coming in August, which is a biopic about Aretha Franklin. So I'm really, really looking forward to that one.
What
as well.
A great list. And Scott Pukas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Summer of Love, or Summer of Soul,
Summer
sorry.
Soul.
Summer of Soul, July 2nd at the Little. It's Questlove. It's about the Harlem Cultural Festival, which took place in 1969, same year as Woodstock. Also, June 18th, Luca, which is a Pixar film. And you guys might groan at this, but July 23rd, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Old, about a beach that turns these children old.
A beach that turns the children old. He had like one good movie once, and then like he had a bunch of interesting ideas.
Yeah, I like Unbreakable. I'm kind of a, I've
I think the village concept was interesting.
I like the village. I think I'm one of the an outlier.
Maybe
that.
We should have an intervention. Convince me M. Night Shyamalan is okay. Look at all these movie shows we're gonna have to do. Online, the full schedule at the Little is where?
Thelittle.org.
All right. I want to thank our guests. What a great hour. Scott Pukas, have fun at the Little Theater. I'm so glad we can get back to the movies with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jared, same thing with you guys over at the Dryden and the George Eastman Museum. Good luck to you guys. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Jackie McGriff, always good.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Evan.
Can't wait to see you in person. And Adam Lubito, great to see you here. Thanks for coming in and sharing your knowledge as always.
Yeah, this is fun. Thanks for having me.
Megan Mack, Emma Ray Stein, Rob Braden, Evan Dawson saying, have a great afternoon, and we're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.
Next up, ding, Kevin Rosario. He runs the cab company. He struggles in the barrio. See, his daughter Nina's off at college tuition is mad steep, so he can't sleep. Everything he get is mad cheap.